You are listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Happy Friday. Welcome back to another episode. Want to talk about Vice President Joe Biden's flip-flop, as one Democratic commentator called it, on the Hyde Amendment. Then I want to play you a clip from Elizabeth Warren saying something absolutely crazy. I know that's very shocking. Then I had a conversation with Roland Warren, the president and CEO of CareNet. But before we get to all of that, first, a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And we're back. One of the things that Joe Biden has been criticized by Democrats about, especially since he has joined the Democratic presidential 2020 presidential race, was his position on the Hyde Amendment. Now, he's always been pro-abortion rights. I would just say pro-abortion, because I don't think you actually have a constitutional right to abortion. Anyway, their lingo, he's pro-abortion rights. He's pro-Roe v. Wade. He's always been that way, at least in recent memory. Prior in the 70s, I don't know what his position was. He's always, however, been for the Hyde Amendment, which limits taxpayer funding for abortion. It limits to only in cases of rape and incest and life of the mother, I believe. So he's been in favor of that, but he has been ravaged. But anyway, here's Joe Biden in 2017 talking about the Hyde Amendment.
Are you still opposed to public funding for abortion?
I still am opposed to public funding to abortion. And the reason I am is, again, it goes to the question of whether or not you are going to impose a view to support something that is not a guaranteed right, but an affirmative action to promote.
Not a guaranteed right. That's interesting of him to say. He, however, told a voter that, and I couldn't find the video for that, or I played, but he told a voter that he did support, or he didn't support, the Hyde Amendment. But then his campaign talked to MSNBC and they said this.
Responding to a question from NBC, Joe Biden's campaign said he continues to support the Hyde Amendment. That's a 40-year-old measure that prohibits federal funding for abortion services, except in cases involving rape, incest, or saving the life of a mother.
So we have that. Now, so which Joe Biden is it? Well, he actually came out with a statement yesterday on the Hyde Amendment. I'm going to play it for you. It's about a couple minutes long. Oops, I'm sorry. I was going to play the wrong clip. Let me pull up the right clip. Here we go.
Folks, before I begin my remarks, I want to address something that right up front. And I know you all know that the fact of the matter is that women's rights and women's health are under assault like we haven't seen in the last 50 years. And we've seen state after state, including Georgia, passing extreme laws in clear violation of constitutional rights protected, including Roe v. Wade. And some have gone so far in states to deny even any exceptions for circumstances that would involve the right of a woman to choose. And it's clear that these folks are going to stop at nothing to get rid of Roe. And it's clear to me that we have to just be just as strong in defending it. I support Roe. I support a woman's right to choose under that constitutional guaranteed provision. And quite frankly, I always will. Folks, you know, and I'm going to fight to protect a woman's right to make her own personal decisions when it gets to her health care. I've also, so for many years, and let me say this before you start to clap or boo, is that for many years as U.S. Senator, I've supported the Hyde Amendment like many, many others have. Because there was sufficient monies and circumstances where women were able to exercise that right, women of color, poor women, women who are not able to have access, and it was not under attack as it was then, as it is now. But circumstances have changed. I've been working through the final details of my health care plan, like others in this race, and I've been struggling with the problems that Hyde now presents. It's become clear to me that to get universal coverage and to provide for the full range of health services women need, which I plan to do with the continued expansion of Medicaid and the public option of a Medicare plan, in that environment where providers like Planned Parenthood are under unrelenting attack, where we have a circumstance, and I want to be clear why I'm taking the position I have. So I make no apologies for my last position, and I make no apologies for what I'm about to say. The fact of the matter is that when, in fact, there is this enormous pressure and even threat to close down clinics that are available in the past for women who do not have the funds but are able to have them paid for privately, as we've been able to do, that was one thing. But we now see so many Republican governors denying health care to millions of the most poorest and most vulnerable Americans by refusing even Medicaid expansion. I can't justify leaving millions of women without access to the care they need and the ability to exercise their constitutionally protected right.
So basically, he's talking about Medicare expansion, which has absolutely nothing to do with abortion. Couple of interesting things he pointed out. He keeps on calling it healthcare, adopting the verbiage of the left. It's not healthcare. Abortion kills. It's medically not necessary. Numerous OBGYNs have gone on record to say if the life of the mother is in danger, our first thought isn't let's kill the baby. The first thought is let's save the mother and do what we need to do and try to save them both. So that it's just mind-blowing to me. But he's talking about women's rights being under attack. You know, okay, to apply this logic to a guaranteed right that the Constitution actually talks about, and that's the right to keep and bear arms, it is constantly under attack. So because of that, maybe we should have taxpayer funding to purchase guns to anyone who wants one. The First Amendment is under attack. Free speech is under attack. Maybe because free speech is under attack, the government should give grants to conservative organizations to create their own social media platform. Pretty sure that Joe Biden and Democratic Party wouldn't go along with that. And I would agree with them. They should. The government does not need to fund. If we have a constitutional right, and I'm not saying abortion is a constitutional right, I think it's something that the Supreme Court in 1973 created out of thin air. If you read through the Roe v. Wade language, it's an inane court ruling. They did legal gymnastics to try to create this right. It's an awful decision. However, just because you have a constitutional right to free speech, right to assemble, right to petition government, right to keep and bear arms and on, does not mean government taxpayers need to fund it. So it's mind-blowing to me. And he also brings up the Republican governor's shutting down clinics. Well, first of all, no one is shutting down clinics. Clinics are shutting down because they lack funds. Why did they lack funds? Well, maybe because they became too dependent upon taxpayer money. I worked for an organization for 10 years that unfortunately became dependent upon federal and state grants. And when those grants ended up, you know, dried up, the organization ended up closing. I left the organization before that happened. But when before we applied for our very first grant, I was kind of the, I felt like I was the John the Baptist in the wilderness, you know, crying out, you know, sounding out warnings about taking government funding. Not just because I had a philosophical problem with it, I did, and I eventually took a pragmatic approach to, you know, to say, well, if they're going to provide, you know, government funding for this particular thing, in this case, it was mentoring. If we don't get it, it's going to go to somebody else. It's not like that government funding is going to go away. I certainly wouldn't advocate lobbying for it, and I didn't, and our organization didn't, but it was available, so we applied and we received it. But I was afraid it was going to also hurt our fundraising ability, and it did. So if you believe women should have the right to have an abortion, if you believe that women who are in poverty should have financial assistance to have an abortion, you have the ability to fund those things yourself. Nobody's entitled to taxpayer money. This whole argument that women are somehow entitled and to taxpayer money, and then Planned Parenthood is somehow entitled. Planned Parenthood right now is suing the state of Iowa because we have the legislature passed an appropriations bill for Health and Human Services that stated basically that abortion providers are not eligible for sex education grants. Right now, Planned Parenthood took the state to court claiming that there is a right. Unfortunately, there's a temporary stay on that ruling until we, you know, until there's a temporary decision or permanent decision made. It's just mind-blowing to me. But anyway, I'm kind of going down the rabbit hole. I want to keep playing some clips. David Axelrod commented on Vice President Biden's statement on CNN.
Look, I think that this was a parable about Biden that goes to question marks about his candidacy. His rollout was flawless, in my view, and he's had a very solid spring. But this underscores questions that people have had about whether he can go the distance. One, because the virtue of having a long record and comforting people and being a figure of stability has the flip side that you have to defend positions that you've had over the course of 45 years in politics, some of which may have been acceptable in the day and not acceptable now. We see that on this issue of the Hyde Amendment. But the other is the way this thing came down. Joe Biden was out on the campaign, and he's not been out that much. And a voter challenged him on the question of Hyde. A video was rolling, and he said he would reverse that policy. Then the next day, the campaign, or when it became to light, the campaign put out a statement and said, no, he still believes in the Hyde Amendment. Then there was a furor, and last night he flipped again. So that was a flip-flop flip, which is never a good thing in politics. And it raises questions about his own performance and his own steadiness and his campaign's performance. So this was not a good, you know, beyond the issue itself, this was not a reassuring episode for the Biden campaign.
Flip, flop, flip. And it was very remarkable to see this, you know, this change from one day to yesterday to this now announcement. Biden was able to, when he announced, kind of stake out some ground that may or may not have been very helpful in the Democratic primary. I don't think it would have necessarily hurt him that much with average voters in the Democratic primary. Obviously, with the fringe far left, it does. And that's who all these presidential candidates are now basically catering to. But he had the ability to kind of stake some ground out, especially if he won the nomination and was heading into the general election. Now, I think Joe Biden's extreme on abortion. before this announcement. But at least he could have said, you know, I'm pro-choice, but I recognize that taxpayers shouldn't have to fund abortions. So I support that. That, at least when it comes to taxpayer funding of abortion, he had a reasonable position. And frankly, it's a position that most Americans agree with. So now that's gone. You know, Joe Biden what seemed to be the sane, reasonable person in the room among, you know, and again, we're comparing him to the rest of the field. But now that's gone. So interesting. I want to play a couple more clips for you. This is Ileana Johnson of Politico talking about his announcement on the Hyde Amendment.
Absolutely right. In and of itself, this may not be that big of a deal, but in terms of a window into how prepared Biden is to deal with issues, it suggests they're really not. The first window into this was the way he handled accusations from women that he made them uncomfortable, and he took 5 or 6 days to come out and talk to the press. With this, he had Cedric Richmond, his campaign chairman, came out and gave one position. Biden came out and gave another position. It was a campaign that was not ready for prime time. And the Trump campaign's theory about all this is that Biden is not going to be able to survive a primary because he will be pulled to the left. This suggests that their theory is right. Biden took a lot of criticism from the left on this, and in the end, he buckled. And it does suggest that if that's a recurring theme, it suggests that he will go into the general election if he does survive the primary as a different candidate than he entered the race.
Yep, he's going to have some explaining to do, and it's definitely going to hurt him in the general election because it's an extreme position. You know, his original, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Thoughts, beliefs, intuition, I guess. That's probably the best word I was looking for. About this issue, about taxpayer funding of abortion, was right because politically, it's politically popular not to support taxpayer funding of abortion. Those who want taxpayer funding of abortion, it's just simply insane. And a vast majority of Americans disagree with that. But he's getting all sorts of pressure from the left, including people among the field. Here's Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, who was interviewed on CNN about, this is before Biden made his decision, about the Hyde Amendment, and he said something incredible. And when I say incredible, I mean incredibly stupid.
I think he should change his position. I think it's wrong. It disproportionately attacks women who don't have the private means to afford an abortion. And it's sort of like saying, you know, I support the troops, but I don't want to pay them. But I mean, that's the analogy here. And I think it's wrong. I mean, he says he's pro-choice. He says he supports a woman's right to this decision with her doctor. And yet he refuses to support federal funds for it. I think it's another example of why it's time for a new generation of leadership in our party, in our country, a new generation of leadership on national security, as I've been talking about a lot on the campaign trail, in women's rights, in so many things.
But on the flip side, the public polling is more where he is. The position of the public polling is more where he is than where you are, because people who don't believe in abortion don't want their taxpayer dollars going to fund them.
Leadership is not following the polls. It's changing public opinion to do the right thing. That's what leadership is all about. And that's what we should expect of our next president.
Do you think that a politician can be fully pro-choice and support the Hyde Amendment at the same time?
It's, in my opinion, no. Because like I said, it's like saying you support the troops, but you don't want to pay them. You support a woman's right for an abortion, but you don't think that we should fund those who can't afford it themselves. And that's just wrong. So this is a place where we need to change public opinion. I think about.
So change public opinion by changing the law. That's not swaying public opinion. That's just acting out, against the clear majority of Americans, whom, by the way, you were supposed to represent, whom, by the way, give you consent to govern. And you should listen to your constituents, and your constituents are basically saying, don't do it. By the way, your constituents aren't just the radical left. So, and comparing funding abortion to paying for our troops, which, by the way, is one of the few things the Constitution says the federal government is supposed to do, is just, that's just insane. Insane. But this is one of the things that the left believes. And this is why, you know, Biden got dragged to the left on this issue. And he certainly didn't show the courage of convictions. I mean, basically, he withered after about 24 hours of being blasted on this issue to change his mind. This was not a principled position by him. This was caving to the fringe left. I would be remiss not to play a clip from Elizabeth Warren saying something very radical, shocker, on climate change. Here we go.
So I'm excited to be here to talk about this, and I'll tell you why. America's faced huge challenges before. World War II, put a man on the moon. This environmental catastrophe bearing down on us may be the biggest challenge yet. But how do we beat it? How do we beat it? We do it by what we've always done as Americans. We invest in science, in innovation, and in American workers. That's how we're going to do it.
So, well, this week we've marked the 75th anniversary of D-Day, the D-Day invasion on the beach of Normandy, where thousands of Americans and British and French soldiers gave their lives, and Canadians as well, storming the beaches, and eventually led to the defeat of Nazi Germany in World War II. But climate change is a bigger challenge than defeating Nazi Germany. Does she really believe that? I swear, I think these candidates are going out and they're trying to find, and I could probably do this every week, just pull clips of crazy town things that Democratic candidates have said. But I think it's like, let's see who can out-crazy the others. Let's see who can be more woke than the others. Now, I think there's probably some common ground we could have on climate change. For instance, I will say I think the climate's changing. I think there's evidence to show that the climate's changing. How much it's actually changing, that's up for debate, because we can't really agree on data sets. People who support catastrophic climate change reject satellite temperatures. So, you know, we can't really even have a discussion on what data sets we're going to use to look at that. Also, they can't answer the question, you know, we can't really determine, is this really man-made? Well, the consensus supposedly says it's man-made, but however, we don't have enough data to really even demonstrate that, because it doesn't go back far enough. So we don't know if this is really cyclical. So, you know, we can't have, but we're not allowed to have a conversation about that, unfortunately. Then also, too, you know, are the suggestions provided by those who are, you know, believers in climate change, is it going to actually help? And from what I've read and seen, very, very little. We're going to kill our economy for, you know, very little return. Speaking of, you know, Biden also, going back to Biden, tacking the left. I mean, he's tacking the left on climate change. He actually came out with a climate change plan where he said that the Green New Deal is a critical framework for climate change. I'm like, are you serious? That's crazy. And we're going to have more of this probably until the election. Crazy things Democrats say. I should just create a segment just for that. crazy things Democrats say. Moving on, I want to play for you an interview I had with Roland Warren. He is the president and CEO of CareNet, which is an organization, a network of crisis pregnancy centers. They also have a crisis line that people can call. We talked about a recent Supreme Court decision on a law, abortion law in Indiana, where they upheld one part of it. They upheld Indiana's ability to tell, basically require that babies who have been aborted to have a proper, you know, either burial or cremation, and not just be thrown in, you know, to rest of medical waste. That's good. I'm glad these babies need to be treated with dignity and respect, and that's good. Obviously, it doesn't really move the pro-life. It doesn't change anything as far as abortion is concerned, but it does. It does make a statement about the dignity of human life, and that I appreciate. But the Supreme Court refused to hear basically a lower court ruling that struck down Indiana's law against abortions that are done based on the sex, race, any disabilities. If an abortion is done for any of those reasons, it would have been deemed illegal. They refused to hear that. Justice Clarence Thomas had a good concurring opinion. He basically brought up the history of eugenics and tied it to abortion. It's a good read. You could search that Clarence Thomas on caffeinatedthoughts.com and read that. But anyway, we talk about that and what's the pathway forward, and he has some different things to say about where we should be at in the fight against abortion. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Roland Warren.
Hey, thank you so much, Roland, for taking time to speak with us on the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Welcome.
Well, glad to be with you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about CareNet, because I'm not sure, I don't want to assume my listeners are familiar with you or CareNet.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So I've been with CareNet since 2012. I spent about a decade with National Fatherhood Initiative, which is another nonprofit that's focused on helping connect fathers to their kids heart to heart, and joined CareNet, which is a network of roughly 1,100 pregnancy centers in the U.S. and Canada. They really seek to offer compassion, hope, and help to anyone who's at risk for abortion, and really to offer a compassion alternative to abortion. So we do that, and we've got a network of pregnancy centers. We've got a national call-in line called Pregnancy Decision Line for folks who are at risk, and then we have a robust initiative that's focused on engaging churches as well. Part of our church initiative, really kind of focused on both emergency care with someone who's calling in, that might be sort of at risk in that moment, and we've got coaches who take those calls and try to help encourage them to a life decision and give them information, life-affirming information. Then the pregnancy centers are more sort of short-term care from sort of conception to birth, and maybe a little bit further there. And then long-term care is really the church's role in really transitioning people from the pregnancy centers to churches for ongoing support and discipleship.
Okay. So recently the Supreme Court took a look at a couple laws in Indiana. One they affirmed, the other one they decided not to. They just basically sent it back to the lower court so it will stand. The one that they overturned actually was the law related to, or the they overturned a previous appeal, a decision by the Seventh Circuit, the Court of Appeals, that basically allows the Indiana law to stand that requires abortion facilities provide either cremation services or proper burial for babies that have been aborted. The one that they did not decide on and let the lower court decision stand was a ruling that overturned Indiana's law banning abortions on based on gender, on race, as well as disabilities. What's your take on the Supreme Court's decision not to offer an opinion on that aspect of the Indiana bill dealing with discriminatory abortions?
Yeah, it's very troubling from my right. perspective because, you know, when you think about it, I mean, obviously the law is important, but it's probably what India was trying to do is important. But in large measure, aspects of it certainly are symbolic. So in other words, there's a way if someone could get around that. So if you never right. disclose that the reason that you wanted to abort was because of gender or race or disability, then, which you're not obligated to do anyway, then you could mm-hmm. just still have an abortion. So in large measure, it was a symbolic gesture talking about affirming life in these specific instances, and the court was unwilling to weigh in on that. That's very troubling to me, particularly when you look at the laws that from Alabama and other places that are coming that potentially could come up and be a challenge that are not just symbolic in terms of ways mm-hmm. we can get them around there, but actually in terms of substance. So if the court was unwilling to hear that, it troubles me a bit, and I'm hopeful that I'm not right in this regard.
Right.
I think the other thing, too, which is just very disconcerting, I mean, just to think about it practically, saying, okay, so if you are a child who's aborted because of your gender or because of your race or because of a disability, we're not going to stop folk from killing you, but we will make sure that you are buried in a dignified, humane manner. I mean, mm-hmm. Just walk through that. I mean, to me, it's sort of like, I mean, again, I understand why that's important to a lot of folks, but to me, it's sort of like, from a victory standpoint, I'm thinking, wow, so you're not going to step in to stop me from being killed
right.
unjustly. But you will make sure that when I'm killed unjustly, that I'll be buried in a humane fashion. I would submit I'd rather have you just make sure I'm not killed than
yeah.
make sure that when I am killed, that I'm handled in a humane manner. So, I get where folks are coming from, and I know it's important in a lot of ways for a lot of folks. But to me, it's very disconcerting. Court would weigh in on that issue, which is a non-issue, frankly, if you don't have abortion. If you don't have the first part of it, then you don't have to worry about the second part of it. And from my standpoint, that's very troubling. And I'm hopeful that it's not a reflection of what could be coming down the road, but we've kind of seen these things happen.
Time, yeah, why did you think the court deferred?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've heard different perspectives on that. I mean, some folks have said, the court doesn't want to get ahead of culture. I've heard that perspective, but candidly, in other areas, the court has been perfectly happy to get ahead of culture. For example, with the same-sex marriage ruling, I mean, 30-plus mm-hmm. states had ruled that marriage is between a man and a woman, essentially. They made a designation, including California, if my member serves me correct. And yet the court went ahead and moved forward in that particular case, and there are other cases like that, and even, frankly, with Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
What happened with Roe v. Wade, when you think about it, is that I don't believe any of the states had laws that were that had abortion all the way up to birth, which is essentially what you have with Roe v. Wade. And the court went even further than most of the states in terms of their abortion laws at the time. So I don't know. That argument to me is a difficult one for me. I don't know. I really don't know.
I have to say, what
the strategy is there, but it just troubles me.
I do share your view. I'm not confident. I actually have some liberal friends that I think are more confident Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned than I am, because I look at Chief Justice Roberts and he's kind of been all over the place. He seems to be more concerned about precedent and the institution than he is, about originalism. So I'm not confident that he would rule to overturn Roe v. Wade. Kavanaugh, I'm not so sure. He's still kind of a big question mark in my mind. The only ones I'm definitely confident probably would be, Samuel Alito as well as Clarence Thomas. And I'm thinking probably Gorsuch, but I'm not entirely sure that he would. So still, we're looking at possibly a, 7-2, 6-3 split on Roe v. Wade overturning it, which is not, obviously promising. So You know, some people also will say, well, okay, we may not overturn Roe v. Wade, but maybe we'll take a stab at Planned Parenthood v. Casey. What do you think about that? I'm not even sure I'm confident about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really, you know, I don't have a lot of visibility on that. Like I said, I mean, I'm troubled by the signal there. And I think probably the bigger thing for me is that, you know, certainly what the work here at CareNet's about is, you know, even if abortion is legal, you know, we certainly want to make it unthinkable in the sense that, you know, that we're offering compassion, hope, and help for anyone who's at risk for abortion. I mean, to me, it's about, like, well, why do women want to have abortions anyway, and why do men support this? And in large measure, certainly there's some surveys that we've done that a lot of it has to do with missing support. In other words, this whole abortion issue is about, it's about 9 months and 1 second. To the degree that a woman doesn't feel that she has support after the pregnancy, she's much more likely to have abortion. And there's indicators that are very key there. For example, 86% of women that have abortions are unmarried, right? So I always talk about the fact that, you know, with the abortion issue, you have two issues, not just the sanctity of life issue, but you also have the sanctity of marriage and family because it's a God-designed issue. You have that as well. And so we in the pro-life movement have really talked and focused on the sanctity of life issue, but we haven't necessarily always linked it to the sanctity of marriage and family issue, even though abortion is in large measure something that happened outside of marriage, devoid of marriage. So in other words, a woman who has someone to be a husband to you and a father to our child growing inside of you is less likely to have an abortion because she doesn't have the support. So from my standpoint, that's where I'm focused on, you know, whether Roe v. Wade is overturned or not. If it's overturned, it's not going to outlaw sex outside of marriage. It's not going to outlaw unplanned pregnancy. And the reality is, well, what's supposed to happen to these women in that situation? I mean, from a Christian perspective, what we want to be doing is offering compassion, hope, and help for them. And so whether Roe v. Wade, if it's overturned, then that means we're going to have a really robust ministry on ramp, primarily through the church in large measure, to come alongside folks who are facing pregnancy decisions. And whatever we want should be doing the day Roe v. Wade's overturned, we should be doing the day before Roe v. Wade's overturned. You don't practice your Hail Mary play in the game. And so this is why a lot of what we're doing at CareNet is really focused on trying to mobilize the church and the ministry components in the church to come alongside facing pregnancy decisions.
I got a little chance to get into your personal history on the life issue, and you know what you're describing sounds like a process that you yourself went through along with your now wife. Are you willing to talk a little bit about that and how that shaped your perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when I was in college, you know, my girlfriend now, my said, based on unplanned pregnancy, and when we were both undergrads at Princeton, you know, she was encouraged to abort, and you know, in that particular instance, she came back to the dorm and kind of said, "Hey, listen, you know, the test was positive, and she was encouraged to abort. She said, I want to get married. I want to have my baby. I want to forward." And the nurse was kind of like, "Well, how are you going to graduate with the baby? How are you going to do any of that? And what do you want to be when you graduate?" "Well, I become a doctor." She's like, "How are you going to become a doctor with a baby?" You know, that kind of thing. And we moved forward, got married. What the nurse didn't know, kind of going back to my point four, which was that she had someone that'll be a husband to you, and I'll be a father to our child growing inside. And because of that, she was much less likely to have an abortion. So even though it was her body and her choice legal, my response certainly had an impact on her choice and on her decision in terms of the missing support. So that's been a model for me as I walk through and think of the issue of practical, it's outside of politics, that's the practical on-the-ground reality of the decision that people are making. It really is that simple. I live it. I know how it, that's where it is. So we certainly have to be reaching out and trying to encourage men to step up to the responsibility there. But even when the guy's not there, we have to make sure that we're providing that missing support. And she has to know that she's getting that support from conception to birth. So that's one of the key things that we've been church who are making life disciples in the street, train small groups in the church to be able to come alongside someone who's facing a pregnancy decision, so that even if she doesn't have a guy with a husband, you have a father to our child inside of you, that surround her with support to help make that decision. Life decision means life support.
So, you know, I liked what you had to say about abortion, making abortion unthinkable. You know, that should be the ultimate goal. How is CareNet, what is CareNet doing to advance, you know, that goal?
Yeah, I think part of it is, like, just really creating a sort of a winsome conversation about how we think about life, how we think about compassion, and in very practical ways, if you think about it, I mean, certainly, you know, we're a Christian ministry whose real focus is on helping people have a transformation in their life by the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? So Jesus said, come as you are, but don't stay as you came. And so we model that the same way. Our model is not transactional, which is come as you are and stay as you are, which is essentially kind of Planned Parenthood with the abortion providers' perspective. Come with this mindset, stay with this mindset, so you can have people. Of a lifestyle that puts you at risk for abortion. Ours is based on the price, which is come as you are, don't stay as you came. And so as we kind of cast that vision out to the public square, that narrative of God's design for life, God's call for life, but then we come alongside people in practical ways, that starts to help people taste and see, so to speak, that life is good. And as we continue to do that through our ministry partners and through our network of pregnancy centers and offering compassion, hope, and help, that really starts to change the culture, and it really starts to change the conversation around the life issue. And it helps people, certainly Christian people, start to see the life issue as a discipleship issue primarily, not just a political one, material support one, but primarily as a discipleship one, trying to make disciples for Jesus Christ and show the love of Jesus Christ in this particular area.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if it's how you're holding your phone or whatnot, so just wanted to make you aware.
Okay.
Yeah, you made a good point. As far, I think a lot of times the church approaches these issues, and it seems like we only engage, or at least from the world's perspective, we only engage from the political realm. But we obviously need to have a holistic approach because, in one sense, you know, there's an argument, what influences what politics? Does politics influence culture? Does culture influence politics? And probably both and a little bit, but I think we neglect the other realms and focus solely on politics, whether it's this issue or whether it's LGBT issue or, you know, whatever, we're going to see a decline in culture. So it's definitely important for, you know, churches to become involved. How have churches partnered with CareNet? What are some things that you've seen churches do to successfully engage in pro-life ministry?
Yeah, I mean, one of the key things that we're seeing through our Making Life Disciples initiative is churches started to offer a ministry on-ramp within the church for people who are at risk for abortion, but also a ministry on-ramp for people outside the church to offer to connect them to the compassion, open help of the church. So, you know, if you're someone who's in a church and you're facing a pregnancy decision, and our data shows that 54% of the women that have abortions profess to be either Catholic or Protestant, or nearly 4 out of 10 who had abortions were attending church at least monthly at the time of their first abortion. So we have a big issue of abortion in the church. In the church on Sunday and in the abortion clinic on Monday. So one of the practical things you have to do is have a ministry on-ramp in the church so that an abortion provider never looks like a compassionate alternative to the church. And most churches don't have that kind of ministry. And that's why we started Making Life Disciples, and people learn more about that at makinglifedisciples.com. But it's really to create small groups within the church with this ministry kit that we developed so that you can train small groups. Like a lot of churches have small groups, but they're about us loving us. What if small groups in the church became about us loving them? What if a small group came together and was trained to go to a pregnancy center and say, listen, you have someone who's facing a pregnancy decision. We as a group commit to walk alongside that person, not just from conception to birth, but long term, which is really what discipleship is. And also right. that same kind of thing being back with someone who's in the church, took a pregnancy test maybe Sunday morning, it was positive and it wasn't good news. What's the mm-hmm. ministry on-ramp for that woman? What's the ministry on-ramp for that couple to get connected to the life support of the church? So we have a goal of 1,000 churches by 2020 that are offering a Making Life Disciples ministry within their church. We're at roughly 700 or so, so we've got a little ways to go. But that really is the transforming piece that needs to happen. There's 400,000 churches in America, which is roughly 2,700 pregnancy centers. I mean, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, I mean, how would 2,700 pregnancy centers that are really designed to really offer support from conception to birth, maybe a little bit further, be able to respond to that? That really is a call of the church. So if just 1% of churches do what I'm talking about, that's 4,000 additional points of compassion in communities, coupled with what you have with pregnancy centers. And I believe strongly that's the kind of response we need to be prepared to have before Roe v. Wade is overturned.
Definitely. So how can your average church-going person, how can they get involved? How can they embrace this vision you have?
Yeah, sure. You can come to our website, which is care-net.org. You can sign up for a number of our free resources. We have a couple of free courses that really help you get engaged on the issue. Pro-Life 101, Choosing Life. These are free courses that you can get involved in. We've got a Pro-Abundant Life blog that you can sign up for to help you get connected to the issue, get connected more to CareNet, and offer you practical ways to get engaged around the issue. And then you can also, if you come to our site or you go to MakingLifeDisciples.com, you can go there to connect into that ministry model. Making Life Disciples is a small group curricula. It's also offered as a self-paced online curricula and then also a group-based curricula online. So there's lots of different ways that you can get connected into that ministry kit. And it will really help you and a small group in your church be able to move beyond a political response or a material response but to a discipleship response, which is what we as Christians are called to do. That's the Great Commission, to go and make disciples for Jesus Christ. And someone's facing a pregnancy decision is a mission field that's open and available for the discipleship conversation. That's really what Christians should be doing.
Hey, Roland, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and God bless you.
You're welcome. Thanks very much. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please make sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's Caffeinated Thoughts, CAFFEINATED, thoughts.com, or you just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to check us out on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Sign up for emails on the website. All the links to those things are right on the website. We would love to keep in touch with you. If you sign up for emails, you won't miss a single update. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast if you are listening to it on the website and would like to know how you can get notifications of new podcast episodes. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean. So you can subscribe any one of those ways. If there's a podcast app that we're not currently on, please make sure to let me know. You can just drop me a line at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com so we can sign up for that as well. That's the reason we're on Stitcher. A listener actually requested that. I didn't even know Stitcher existed before that, so anyway, you can let me know. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening. This is Shane Vanderhart. And until next time, my friends, take care.